Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramelides and he, as ever, is Sid Lowe. Hello Sidney.
Good morning Phil, how are you?
Good morning, I'm good mate. We are recording on a Monday morning. Usually we record on a Monday afternoon because Sidney is busy writing his La Liga column on a Monday morning. But there was no La Liga this weekend, so Sidney doesn't have a column to write. But there's still plenty for us to talk about because we had the Copa del Rey final, which saw Athletic Club beat Mallorca 4-2 on penalties after the game finished 1-1. There's loads for us to talk about in terms of breaking down this game and what it means and the fallout for both clubs and managers. We'll also look ahead to what's coming up this week in the Champions League because we've got some massive games involving Spanish sides. It's Real Madrid Man City tomorrow and Atleti Dortmund PSG Barca on Wednesday. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. We want to tell you about our Patreon as well, which is where you can support the podcast and get lots of bonus content. Our patrons at patreon.com/TSFP got a brand new episode of Rincón Cultural last week. We discussed a wet Semana Santa, visiting Córdoba, living in Barcelona, and Sid's memorable encounters with wild boar. If that doesn't convince you to sign up, I don't know what will. But you also get a Q&A podcast, bonus podcast, loads of extra content for around €4 a month. Right, so let's talk about this Copa del Rey final, Sid, which you and Al were both at. First things first, the vibe in Seville looked absolutely incredible. And there were 70,000 people, they said, from the city of Bilbao that had gone down to this final. That's a ridiculous number of people.
Everything was red and white. The numbers were huge and there were loads and loads of Athletic fans as well. It was really, one of the things that was interesting was talking to friends and colleagues who support Athletic who had come down for the final without tickets, which is not that unusual. But the thing that struck me was that the amount of people who had come down to the final without tickets with no intention of even trying to get tickets. It's not like they'd gone down there and they thought, you know what, we might get lucky. Let's be there just in case. Let's, you know, because you never know someone. There might be touts. There might be tickets flying about. There might be tickets that get released on the day. They had gone down and said, we don't care that there's no tickets. It's not about that. It's about being part of this. It's about being there with our friends, even if it's just in the city, so that afterwards we can be part of it, so that we can be part of the build-up. And the 90 minutes itself, or as it turned out, 120 plus penalties, that matters. Of course it matters, and it is our everything. But we just want to be part of this. And it was immense. I will admit that it didn't feel particularly immense afterwards because it was so late and La Cartuja is so far from anything. And I'll be honest, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I thought, I'm not going looking for it now. But during the day was extraordinary. I didn't really go looking for it then, but just coming into the city to go to the hotel, to find your way to the stadium, there were just Athletic fans everywhere. And actually, possibly the best footage, to be honest, is from the night before, because loads of the Athletic fans went early. Quite a lot of them have been there all week. There was this great story about these Athletic fans who come down the river from Bilbao on a boat. So they'd gone across the north coast of Vigo and then come down through Spain. And it's just brilliant. And it's the way football, I don't know if it is the way it should be, actually, because it's a bit nuts. But it's great that it's the way it is for some people.
Wow, that is absolutely wild. Bilbao to Seville on a boat. That's, pretty wild. It was at La Cartuja, which we know is one of the worst stadiums in Spain. Well, that's where the Copa del Rey final is going to be held for the foreseeable future. The atmosphere did sound pretty good, though. I mean, oh, you were there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But it would. It would have been better in a better stadium. There's no two ways about that. But the atmosphere was fantastic. The noise was intense. I can only apologise at this point to Mallorca fans because it may feel a little Athletic centric. All of this coverage because they were the bulk of the people there. And I think, you know, I've just mentioned people coming down the river in a boat. It's worth pointing out that most of our listeners will know this. In fact, hopefully all of our listeners know this, but Mallorca is on an island. It's not that easy to get to Seville. There were people who flew across. There were people who took the ferry across to Valencia and drove from there. There were people taking all sorts of bizarre combinations to try and get there because it's not easy to do. There were a group of Mallorca fans trying to fly from Ibiza who had their flight cancelled. I'm not going to name the airline that did it, but put it this way, it's not surprising that it was this airline that did it.
It was Welling.
And had to miss it. Oh, you've said it. Okay. It's not entirely surprising, to be perfectly honest, I'm afraid. And it was just fabulous. But yes, within the stadium, I was behind the goal where the Athletic fans were. So this is why I say apologies. I don't really have a sense of the noise from the Mallorca fans because I was so close to the Athletic fans. But the noise all around the ground was fantastic. One moment where you did really notice it actually was just before the penalties, and Mallorca's players went and celebrated with their fans, which is, of course, partly about to trying to create the conditions that put pressure on Athletic that sort of said, we know we've got this, and I'm trying to replicate what they'd done in the semi-final against Real Sociedad. But even though there was a degree of them playing a role at that point, it was fantastic watching the fans respond to that, watching the fans saying, you know, whatever happens now, look how close you've taken us. Look at the point you've taken us to. And it was just brilliant. And the Mallorca fan zone, which was much, much closer to the stadium than the Athletic fan zone, was packed as well. That was a great occasion.
I mean, let's talk about the actual game then. Mallorca taking the lead before Sunset equalised for Athletic Club. And then Nico Williams, who was the MVP, officially had plenty of chances. He was the man of the match, set up the goal for Sunset, could have had at least two or maybe three goals himself, certainly had some good chances. Athletic deserved to win on the balance of play, but Mallorca had their chances. And at the start of the second half, Kyle Larin is through one-on-one with the goalkeeper and misses. And if he makes that 2-0, it's a very different game, I think.
Yes, to completely agree with you. Yeah, there are lots and lots of elements to pick up on in terms of the analysis of the game itself. And I suppose that's one way of starting it, is to look at that Larin chance and look at the way that Mallorca started in the first goal and the way that the game ended with a penalty shootout. And that is to say that, in a way, this played out the way that Mallorca wanted it to. Now, I don't think that's necessarily contradictory with saying that Athletic were the better side. I think they were. They created far more chances. They had more of the ball. They had more desire to avoid extra time, to avoid the penalties. But it ended up being what Mallorca wanted. And Mallorca were able, I think, to reduce Athletic to relatively little. Not to nothing, because they created chances and they could have won it earlier. But to relatively little, given that this is a side. Well, let's just give you the stats from the semi-finals. The two games at San Mamés against Barcelona and Atletico, they scored 7 goals. Like, this isn't an easy team to stop. Now, you could say, well, this isn't San Mamés. No, but it is a stadium full of their fans. It is partly about their identity. I think Mallorca did a couple of things that were really interesting for me. One was in the first kind of 25 minutes or so. Now, I know this isn't amazing tactical genius because it's something we would all think about. But it was remarkable being behind the goal that Mallorca were attacking in the first half to see the dominance of Marici, the way that they could go long to him and know that he was going to win everything. And Athletic, who are a tough team, they're a good team in the air, they're a physically strong team. I thought they had a real wobble in the first 20 minutes. I think they really struggled to deal with Marici, partly because Marici is brilliant at this. And I felt that at times in those early periods, Athletic didn't seem comfortable when they got the ball, especially when they were trying to bring it out from the back. I think that Mallorca did something which they'd done a little bit to Real Sociedad. I say this, by the way, from a position behind the goal and not from a high up position. And it's possible that my interpretation is coloured by that, quite literally by that perspective. No, but it was similar to the Real Sociedad game in that this wasn't a Mallorca team that stayed very deep and said, come on then, attack us. We just won't let you pass the front of our penalty area. It was a Mallorca team that said, we're going to push you back a little bit and we're going to defend a little bit more front-footed than we sometimes do. And I think they did this against Real Sociedad. And in particular, I felt that the two fullbacks for Athletic weren't really able to get in the game as much as they would normally like, Yuri and Oscar de Marcos, because partly because the two wing-backs for Mallorca were wing-backs, or at least were trying to be wing-backs, not just extra defenders. Then, just as Athletic started to get into the game, Mallorca scored. And at that point, you think, wow, it's going to be really hard for Athletic now. And I thought for 5 or 6 minutes, Athletic looked all over the place. But then they found their way into the game, and it was always Nico. Everything was out to Nico, have him run at them. And he created chances, he made things happen, as you say. He had one brilliant chance that he puts in the side netting. He has a goal ruled out for offside, which looked actually even more clearly offside than it turned out to be with a VAR review. The VAR review suggested it was much closer. He sets up a shot on the edge of the area, I think one for Guruceta and one for Ruiz de Galarreta, I think it is. He's the guy that they go to. But I did think that at that point, okay, Mallorca have kind of managed this quite well. And I think there was a point in which Mallorca just felt, get to halftime. They get to halftime, and then, as you say, there's that Larin chance. Larin misses that chance. And then I thought for 15 minutes or so, Mallorca were totally under the cosh. And really, it was Mallorca that was struggling. And then the other tactical thing that I thought was interesting was the changes that Aguirre made gave them a bit of control back. Really did give them a bit of control back. And at that point, I thought, wow, the storm's gone. They're through this now. Obviously, they're not through it completely because Nico had set up the goal in the meantime, and it's 1-1. But it's not the inevitable Athletic victory. And then, as you say, they then got another chance, which is Marici, right at the very, very end. It's a really good save from Julen.
Yeah.
And it got to the point that Mallorca wanted it to get to. But yes, you're right. I think Athletic fundamentally probably deserve to win this.
Quick word on Nico Williams, because he renewed his contract a few months ago at Athletic, but I think he's still got a very accessible buyout clause of around 60 million euros. Are we expecting him to be at Athletic next season?
Next season, yes, I think we are. Beyond next season, I'm not so sure. I think there is a feeling within Athletic, and I think a degree of acceptance as well, that at some point he may move on. My inkling is that he stays next season. That's not based on anything really concrete, but on kind of piecing bits of information together. I thought this was a really brilliant performance from him. I really do. And as I say, in that first half, when Athletic were under pressure, it was out to Nico every single time. And he was running at people and he was making life difficult for them and he was creating chances. But do you know what? I feel like I want to pick up on... And there's another one in the second half when he dashed in on the left. He got all the way to the byline. He played the ball across the face of the goal. I mean, almost on the goal line. And I think it's his brother coming in, or maybe it's Guruceta. I think it's his brother. Doesn't quite get a touch. You think, oh, that is, you know, that is on a plate as they could ever be. But I want to pick up on the pass for the goal. Because the pass for the goal, we look at Nico as a player who's exciting, who's dynamic, who goes at people, who's skillful. I don't think, to be honest, we've looked at him and thought, there is a technically accomplished passer of subtle passes. And that pass for the goal is a brilliant, perfectly weighted, the angle's not that easy to see, the path of the ball is absolutely right. And I think it's really, really interesting to see this exciting player do something which is much more about, okay, to use that Spanish word, pausa. To have that kind of that moment of calmness to play the really, really incisive pass. And I was really struck by it. He also won the ball back, by the way, to keep that move alive. Admittedly, he's also the one who gave the ball away for the first really good Mallorca chances, which is a Marici shot. But on the goal, I thought it was a brilliant pass, and I thought it was slightly out of character for him. And it made me think, do you know what? Maybe there's even more to come from Nico.
That pass is almost exactly the physical manifestation of what the Spaniards call, they have a word for it, and we don't really have a word for it in English, to filter a pass, which, you know, I don't really know how to translate it, but it's basically that, play those through balls.
I guess in England you could call it threaded, can't you? You thread a pass through. That idea that you thread a pass through, that you're putting a thread through the eye of a needle, and it's just absolutely right. Or maybe slotted. We sometimes refer to a slotted pass. But this is, I think it's brilliant. I think it's really brilliant. And the finish, by the way, is lovely.
Terrific. We have to talk about both managers as well. Ernesto Valverde triumphing with Athletic Club, a club extremely close to his heart, obviously. Third tenure in charge of Los Leones. And just a really underrated manager. I think we rate him. We've spoken about him. We know how good he is. But it does feel that he is not rated as high in the sort of pantheon of Spanish managers currently active. He's not given the credit he seemingly deserves, I don't think.
No, I would agree with you. And I think this final has shifted that a little bit, because I think people have picked up on this. And I do think, for what it's worth, that there has been a recognition, and I would say as well a celebration in Spain of everything that this means for Athletic. You know, a recognition of that 40 years, a recognition of Athletic as being a club that kind of reconciles you with, if you like, the idea of football the way it used to be. It kind of puts you back in touch with this sort of slightly nostalgic feeling, maybe even a feeling of purity. I'm uneasy about the word purity, but you know, that idea of a kind of a purity of intent and bringing players up from a very small area, as I've said before. What is it, 4.9% I think of the Spanish population is eligible to play for Athletic. Only 4.9%, they continue to do this. But I think that has gone hand in hand with a recognition of what Valverde has done and a fondness for him as well, because I think he's very well liked. He's not massively effusive, but certainly those that know him really like him. And I think actually there is a sense of him being a really decent, good man, as well as a good manager. And I think that has shifted a little bit with this victory. But you're right, what happened at Barcelona will always be there. And I don't necessarily, by the way, I don't necessarily dismiss that argument from Barcelona fans that Barcelona team could have been more, that Barcelona team should have achieved more, particularly in Europe, that they hang on to the memory.
Only in Europe, because domestically they won the league twice.
Hang on, I'm coming to that. Yes, that they hang on to, although hang on is maybe not the right word, but the mind's eye takes them back to Rome, and in particular takes them back to Anfield, and that weighs heavily and eclipses the other things. But exactly as you're saying, domestically they won two league titles in a row. They almost won one of them without losing a game. They lost 5-4 to Levante. Was it 2 weeks to go or 3 weeks to go in the season? And that game, by the way, really hurt Valverde. Like, personally, it was like really massive, massive disappointment. And one of the few times I think where he felt genuinely let down by people was that game, because that was the chance to make something historic of a season that was pretty good anyway. And also, of course, the context of this is it starts with a game against Real Madrid that they lose in the Super Cup. And that footage of Piqué on the bench thinking, my God. And he said afterwards, for the first time since I've been at Barcelona, I feel inferior to Real Madrid. And that's the Barcelona team who's just lost Neymar that wins the league, and wins the league by miles. That said,
they finished 19 points ahead of Real Madrid.
Yeah, and it's extraordinary. It's a brilliant league title. That said, it is true, and this is why I do accept in part some of the argument from Barcelona fans, and I do accept this, even if I don't entirely agree with it, the idea that, yeah, but look at the team, we weren't always that great to watch, that this team should be capable of winning the league. I think that's not quite true, but I sort of understand the argument there. That said, I think what's come later has served to reinforce that actually it was quite impressive what they did in La Liga. And I do think Valverde is someone that even those people who didn't like him as a manager, and even those people who I think massively overstepped the mark while he was at Barcelona, probably do quite like his personality now, at least. And I'm really pleased for him. But I do think you're right. I do think that it baffles me that when we talk about elite managers, his name isn't there. I guess it's because we want to have someone who feels like I don't know, a revolutionary, a philosopher, a thinker. I don't know what it is. And what Valverde does is he talks himself down. Funnily enough, I'm going to tell you this one. Me and Al were talking about this on Saturday on the way to the game, because we stumbled across a journalist. I'm not going to tell you who he is, because I sort of don't really want it to go in that direction. There's a journalist who kind of looks like anything but a journalist. He's kind of a punk. I mean, genuinely, kind of a punk, a bit of a nutter, but a brilliant journalist, a genuinely brilliant journalist. And another journalist I remember once, who is a friend of his, admittedly, of this journalist. I remember him writing something about Ernesto Valverde. I mentioned this to Al on Saturday after we'd seen the first of these two guys. And he wrote about Valverde once, and he wrote about a scene which had Valverde talking to this journalist. And they are genuinely good friends as well, by the way. And it said, the secret of both of them is they are not what they appear to be. And I think that says something about Valverde. Valverde kind of doesn't seem bothered, seems completely laid back, doesn't seem to care about tactics, doesn't seem to be hassling anyone, doesn't seem to be putting the work in, seems to be taking it all in stride. But he cares, but he works, but he's doing all those things. All those things that we think he's not, he is as well. He just wears it so lightly that he... I think he's almost a victim of his own kind of narrative of, it would be all right.
Yes.
He's a victim of playing himself down in part.
I don't want to dwell on his time at Barcelona, and I know statistics aren't the be-all and end-all, but just to go back and pick up on what you were saying about him being criticised for not necessarily being a particularly attacking team that played particularly well. In that 2017-18 season, where they finished 17 points ahead of Real Madrid, they scored 99 goals. which
it's quite
a lot. In the 2018-2019 season, where they finished top of the league again, they finished 19 points ahead of Real Madrid. They scored 90 goals. That's 27 goals more than Real Madrid managed. I mean, I don't want to be revisionist, and I know there were bad moments, and I know that the Champions League hurt him a lot as well. And then, the next season, he sacked with them top of the league. I mean,
I could not agree more. I do understand some of those arguments, but I don't share them. And I think he's great. And I find it baffling, by the way, that you know, I don't want to make this English-centric, but you see, for example, some of the names thrown around at the moment, because obviously the Man United job might become available and has done in the past because the Liverpool job is becoming available. We've had recently the Chelsea job available and the Spurs job available. And I'm not saying he wasn't on the lists, and I'm not saying that the lists, what we see in the media, are necessarily true. But I find it curious that in this big discussion of, wow, who would you have? Why isn't he a name that's there? When you look at what he's achieved, there are people who are nowhere near him, like not even close. And I'm not saying it matters whether or not the media talks about him, but I just find it a bit sort of, shouldn't he be on the list? This guy who's won everything or nearly everything, not quite everything in fair.
Gary O'Neill is the fifth favourite to be the next Liverpool manager.
I've got nothing against Gary O'Neill. He might be a lovely man. I know nothing about him, but seriously.
Well, yeah. A quick word about another manager as well, Javier Aguirre, who's done an incredible job taking Mallorca to this first final since 2003 and getting them so, so close as well, and having a team with a pretty clear identity and a really clear idea of how to play. And they all seem to have bought into it and they all seem to understand.
Yeah, and what Aguirre's done. I think Aguirre is another one a little bit like Valverde. There's a fondness because of the way that he behaves, which is different to Valverde. Obviously, he's funnier. He's much more direct in press conferences. He kind of winds people up, but there's a toughness as well. In fact, it was interesting talking to people in Mallorca last week about, you know, the kind of the Aguirre character, but also the rigidity of some of the things that he does, some of the organisational stuff that he does, and you absolutely have to buy into the way he's doing things. Yet again, we're talking about styles. It is true there are people that want them to be more expansive, but as Aguirre often says, you know, with the players we've got, what do you want us to do? This is the way we have to play. You have to be sensible. You have to be conscious of what you've got. I think them reaching the final is huge for them. It was an enormous achievement. And it's an achievement that comes off the back of putting three past Girona and beating Real Sociedad. Now, yes, it's true, it wasn't always the prettiest. Yes, it's true that they, and Aguirre himself was saying this against Real Sociedad, they were probably a little bit fortunate, to be honest. And it's baffling to think that Real Sociedad didn't find their way through. But he is someone, I really like him in terms of the honesty. He's very refreshing. He talks about kind of football in an old school way, but not in a kind of, do you know, sometimes you get that kind of old school discourse from some managers and it feels dismissive of, these young generation, who do they think they are? With Aguirre, it's more like, look, this is what I am. I'm going to take on what they are, but this is what I am and I'm not going to change. And I think him and Mendilibar managed to do that without it feeling, how do I put this? Without it feeling bitter, without it feeling angry.
Yes.
Without it feeling like they've been pushed out. And yet, in part, they sort of have. But Aguirre, what he's done is great. Obviously, he has a real battle in his hands to stay up. And of course, if they were to go down, now they should stay up, to be honest. Although he himself has made it clear that if you look at their fixture list, it's really bad for the next 4 weeks. So in four weeks' time, we might be looking at them saying, oof, they're in trouble. And if they were to go down, much as it's his success to get to the Copa del Rey final, that would be his failure as well. That is true.
It would be. They had a terrific season last season, top half finish.
And they were really good last season. Yeah, and I think it was overlooked a little bit, actually, how successfully and how comfortably they avoided relegation last year. I think that was overlooked a bit.
So Athletic flew back to Bilbao yesterday. They're going to celebrate on Thursday when the famous La Gabarra, the little boat, is going to be taken out on the water for the first time in 40 years. The entire city of Bilbao will be out to celebrate this. So if you're anywhere near there, I suggest
getting
yourself to Bilbao if possible.
I'm tempted to go up there. I really am.
Yeah, I think, you know, given some of the other things that you've trekked across the country to see, this would be worth it.
I wasn't going to, because I thought, well, you know, it's for a start, because I thought it's someone else's celebration and so on, and it's not really my place and things, albeit as a journalist, I kind of suppose it is. But I have had four almost identical messages from people in Bilbao. Mm. And people in Bilbao who matter, kind of saying to me, you've got to come for this. You've got to come and see this.
Good.
And the fourth of them made me think, you know what?
Yeah,
I do, haven't I? I've got to go.
I think you do. It's been 40 years. You're in fine health, Sydney, but I'm not sure if we're going to see it again. So let's see. Yeah, I'm being generous, but you know. Okay, let's move on because we do have three massive European fixtures involving Spanish sides this week in the Champions League, not least tomorrow at the Bernabeu, where it's Real Madrid against Man City, Sid. This has sort of crept up on us a little bit. Obviously, Real Madrid have had 9 days off preparing for this game. Manchester City, in the meantime, have had to play two games, which I don't know, actually. What's beneficial? Is it better to be in sort of competition mode, but maybe this little break is not actually that beneficial for Real Madrid? What do you reckon?
I don't know. I've been wondering this myself, and Guardiola has complained about it.
Yeah.
Now, for what it's worth, the context of this, of course, is that Real Madrid didn't make it to the Copa del Rey final.
Yes.
Because had they done, we might be thinking, oh, they've just had a final and they immediately have to go into this game, and that's really tough. Obviously, the nature of the fixture list in England is that little bit worse because of the League Cup. But I don't know if it's beneficial for Real Madrid to have kind of taken out the competitive element of their football. And of course, having come off the back of an international break as well, then you come back and you play Athletic, who are kind of resting for the Copa del Rey. Now, I'm not saying it's not a game. It is still a game. Mm. But maybe it doesn't have the same edge. I wonder, you know. I mean, obviously Man City were at more risk of fatigue and more risk of injury. Mm. But I just wonder if actually having competed might be better for them than Real Madrid having sat there twiddling their thumb for 9 days. Now, I know they haven't twiddled their thumbs, literally. But, well, they might have done. Who knows? They might have been at home giving it all this. But I feel like it actually may not be as beneficial to Real Madrid as Guardiola has implied. Mm.
Real Madrid are training as we speak. At the time of recording, they are currently training at Valdebebas, where Al is joining us from to oversee this podcast. And they've only got two players out. The only two players that aren't training are Courtois and David Alaba. I don't know if we're going to see Eder Militao tomorrow. It feels like a big ask to thrust him back into it after 2 minutes and three touches against Athletic Club. But it feels like they might need him. I don't know, because Nacho's been in such poor form, then the return of Militao could be a big boost.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you say and then the very next day you get to look stupid. I felt like the return against Athletic, giving him those couple of minutes, was a return to kind of give him, if you like, the reward for the work, for the rehabilitation. I think if you really thought he was going to make it to the City game, wouldn't you have given him 20 minutes? Wouldn't you give him a little bit more? Although, admittedly, we've just been talking about this, the nine days that they've had, maybe that makes you think, well, actually, that is time to get him close. But without having competed, it's difficult to imagine. My feeling would be that we'll see Tchouaméni at centre-back, Camavinga in midfield, where Tchouaméni would normally be. But we'll have four midfielders, so that kind of protects him a little bit from the fact that he's not naturally a pivot, or at least not naturally a single-man pivot. And then I think we'll probably see Militao in the second leg, depending, of course, on what kind of game the second leg is. And, of course, depending on the suspension situation, because I think Real Madrid have got, is it four players who are one card away from being suspended for the second leg? And I've got a feeling that one of them might actually be Tchouaméni. I'm not 100% sure, but I think one of them might be Tchouaméni.
Ooh, okay, yeah, that could be a conditioning factor. I mean, you know, predictions are difficult, very difficult. But what's your gut feeling with this fixture?
I mean, obviously, our listeners know that my gut feeling in the Champions League is always that Real Madrid go through. Actually, last year against City, it wasn't. I must admit, last year against City, I did feel like, you know, City are better than them. And off the back of what had happened the previous year, that sense of kind of a mission, if you like, to make up for the way that they lost it. This year, I find it much harder to call. I lean towards Real Madrid, I think partly just because it's a Champions League, but and also because of what has come to me from English colleagues about how City are playing this year.
Mm.
But I do think City are possibly a stronger team, if not a stronger collection of players. I'm going for Real Madrid to go through, but I think it'll be tight.
Ooh, Okay, well, there we go. We've also got Atletico Madrid against Dortmund and PSG against Barca. Two really big games for both of the Spanish sides in terms of their seasons.
Yeah, well, absolutely, because, of course, neither of them really and truly think they can win the league. Barcelona are going to push in case they get, you know, given half a chance in case the door opens, because they do still have a Clásico to come. So it's not impossible that it opens up. But this is the season for both of them. In truth, it's the season for everybody, really, because it's still the Champions League, whatever's happening in La Liga. And I think at times we shouldn't allow ourselves to be dragged into too much into that idea of, well, you've got to win something because your objective is to win something. And if there's nothing else, well, yeah, but also because it's the Champions League. I think with Barcelona, there's a slight difference because they come from a place where there's a recognition of their weaknesses. So I think the idea of them competing and going out, say, in a semi-final would actually be accepted and welcomed rather than necessarily the demands for them to win it. Atletico is slightly different, which is not to say that they should have demands on them to win it, but their season has been so strange. And there have been moments when you thought, yeah, they really are good. And remember, they knocked Real Madrid out of the Copa del Rey. They are unbeaten against Real Madrid in the league games. And then you get into Europe and you think, okay, but so that shows you that this is a team that can compete. And somehow it just hasn't happened consistently enough, and particularly away from home. I feel like the draw has been reasonably kind to them within the context of a draw of eight really good teams. You know, you don't look at this quarterfinal and think, there's no one I wouldn't want in this. Possibly Dortmund, who they've got. You know, possibly you'd say, well, if you're going for the eight strongest teams in Europe, would it be this eight? It wouldn't be far off. Maybe Dortmund wouldn't be in there. Maybe Inter Milan would be instead. Maybe even Liverpool would be, who aren't even in the Champions League at all this year. Maybe, given the way they're playing, Bayer Leverkusen would be. But I think that's kind of a stretch in terms of the names and stuff and what you would choose. But I feel like the draw has opened up a little bit for Atletico, and that there is actually an opportunity that has been presented to them now. And I think they know that, by the way. No one's going to say so, of course, not publicly. But I think they know that.
And what about Barcelona up against PSG? I mean, that on paper, that looks a pretty tough tie.
It does, of course it is. But, you know, they're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It should be tough. I will be honest with you. I am one of those people who thinks that after the game against Real Sociedad, in Spain at least, there was a rush to declare PSG a great team, which I thought was premature. They did play very well against Real Sociedad, and I thought it was very interesting the way they reshaped the team to allow Mbappe to play off the left, moving Dembélé into a kind of a central position, almost as a false nine, and opening the spaces for Mbappe to exploit. And I think there's obviously no doubt that Mbappe is a genuinely phenomenal footballer, an absolutely phenomenal footballer. And I think he will do damage to any team in the competition. But I do think that there has been, in terms of the analysis of it, if you like, I think a slight exaggeration of just how clearly favourites PSG are. I'm not sure it's that clear. I do think Barcelona have a good players. We've said this all season. I do think they've mostly not played very well. We've said that all season as well. But there are little things that are starting to fall into place. There are key players who are starting to play well, none more so perhaps than Robert Lewandowski, who has really had a pretty poor season, but I actually think has had a really good 2 months now. A really good 2 months. And you're still talking about one of the great strikers, or at least in theory, one of the great strikers. I must admit, there have been moments in his career, when I've had little doubts about him. But then every time you kind of start to have a doubt, then he does it again. And I just sort of look at Barcelona and think, I don't think this is impossible. Are PSG favourites? Probably. But I don't think it's as clear cut as people are starting to believe. I mean, post that Real Sociedad game, I had this discussion on one of the Spanish TV shows about, you know, how do we rank the eight teams in the quarterfinals, 1 to 8 in terms of possibility to win the Champions League? And almost everyone went City and Madrid first and second, almost everyone. And there was quite a lot of variation between third down to eighth, although I think everybody had Dortmund as eighth. So between third and seventh, there was quite a lot of variation. But loads of people had PSG as three. Loads. And I must admit, I thought, I don't buy that. I mean, I might be wrong, of course. They might go and win it. Of course they might, because they've got good players. And I think they've got a brilliant manager. And we said this when the draw was made. Remember when the draw was made, we say our PSG aren't that good and Real Sociedad could actually beat them. But, and that but was a big, heavy but. But, when was this? In late November, wasn't it? We said, by February, I remember us using almost these exact words, we have a lot of faith in Luis Enrique building a team that works. And there are signs that he started to do that.
Big, heavy but. We have our episode name.
Yeah, I've avoided the obvious jokes here.
Yes, as did I.
About who's got a big heavy butt. We're back talking about Luis Suarez again, despite him leaving Spain many years ago.
So, Champions League coming up this week for us to look forward to. As we said, Real Madrid City on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, Atleti Dortmund, PSG against Barca. We will be discussing those ties over at patreon.com/TSFP on our bonus podcast this week. So come and join us. It's only €4 a month and it's a good value as well. If not, we'll be back here next Monday, as always, talking about Spanish football for free for you guys, as always. Adios.
Cheerio.
Podcast Network.